then continuing with the conversation about the liability insurance aspect, if you are affected by, in all intents and purposes, this part of our conversation on roads, or what could be any municipal service, how do you start getting your own back? Simon Coleman is a liability insurance specialist at Santam. Simon, thanks so much for joining us. If I get, I damage my tire on a pothole, I've not ever laid a claim like this before, but in terms of what Santam is seeing, is it easy to prove that based on negligence of a municipality, the lack of maintenance on roads, that it's quite easy to prove that the damage to my car was caused by the lack of maintenance to a road surface?
Yeah, hi Lester, thanks for having me on the show. I can't really comment on, you know, how successful motorists or even insurers have been in claiming back from municipalities where they've failed to maintain the roads. I think for most people, it's just seen as a massive hassle factor. And if they've got an insurance policy, you know, they'll kind of put in a claim there and leave it to the insurers to try and recover from the municipalities. But I don't think that happens very frequently. I think the real issue here is if the roads haven't been maintained, you know, how do we sort of get the municipality to kick into action? And I know we've seen some amazing public-private partnerships in the insurance industry where they've set about repairing these potholes. And that is, of course, in the insurer's best interest as well, because it means that they'll have less claims.
At the end of the day, we're also debating whether it should be the private sector or community civil engagement's responsibility, when the legal and the political responsibility rests with the people that we've elected to go into government and to see to our municipal needs, isn't it, sir?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you spoke about it earlier. Apologies, I couldn't listen. I was on a plane this morning. But if you look at what happened in Klitlang River, that's a municipality in the northwest. Yeah. Earlier last year, I think around about February, the Residents Association managed to get the courts to see their side of things, and they were handed the responsibility of looking after some of the water reticulation and sanitation functions. And at the same time, the judge gave the municipality a sort of slap on the wrist. Yeah. And invited them to come back and say why this arrangement shouldn't be made more permanent. I'm not sure how that's been resolved. I haven't seen anything in the media since then. But it is interesting because, I mean, the community obviously wants the best possible service they can get. And if they can't get it from the local government, then, of course, they're going to try and do it themselves. I think the Gauteng issue or the Gauteng case is interesting, because clearly the residents followed the right procedure to get control of those functions. I think any member of the community that just takes it upon themselves without going through the proper legal processes is probably not only potentially facing litigation from other community members if something goes wrong, but also from the municipality. So it is a very tricky issue, but it can be achieved. And I think, like many things, South Africans have obviously taken it upon themselves, like with security, for instance. You know, I mean, most people that live in formal housing or in estates are paying additional funds for security, which one could argue is the ultimate responsibility of the state.
At the end of the day, two things could either happen, and two things have happened already. We look at Koignas in the Northern Cape, where people have essentially diverted their rates and taxes, so it's tax flight. What they've done, they haven't gone and invested and buried it under a mattress. What they've done is they've created a trust, and out of that trust, we will fix the services. So that's one thing that could happen, tax flight. If governments, municipalities don't provide the service, or you have major industries pulling out. I'm looking, for example, the Lichtenberg example, where the clover factory, the milk factory that makes feta cheese, and where probably the feta cheese that's in your fridge is produced, they then leave. They say, no, we're going to move out of the municipality in Lichtenberg, and we're going to go look for a more desirable place. I think they moved to KZN, and with that 500 jobs lost in Lichtenburg. So there is that, that I think municipalities have to look after. But we, what this also raises, particularly in the Clover example, businesses, large and small, losing money. If you don't have a water reticulation plant that works, if you don't have the roads that must carry goods from A to B, you lose money. Is there any way that through a legal case or trying to recoup what you've lost, put pressure on municipalities and governments by saying, you're costing me money, I've lost, and I can prove I've lost money, I've lost business because what you have not done?
Well, I mean, I know the Public Finance Management Act and several other pieces of legislation, I think they do provide some protection, actually, for the members of the local government in terms of how far their personal liability stretches. I'm not sure if any of these cases have succeeded against the municipalities. I mean, you know, it's the same with power supply. You know, if your factory has to shut down for 2 weeks, because you don't have power, you know, can you put in a claim against the local government or against Eskom? So these are all things that I believe are going to be tested in court. Perhaps, you know, what is relevant, though, to the community members is, if you do want to take over these responsibilities and you're setting about fixing potholes or repairing and maintaining the local sanitation plant, you know, what is your liability in that? Because, you know, there's that old saying, no good deed goes unpunished. And that's certainly the case when you find community members taking over the responsibility of things that they might not necessarily have the skills for. They have the will to do it, but not necessarily the skills. And I think what we've seen, certainly in other areas of business, you know, when the business owner, for instance, takes over the security functions in their office park, they're carrying some liability attached to that. You know, if a security guard accidentally shoots somebody or arrests somebody, then you find the security company having some liability, and of course, the employer of them, the insured in the case of a liability insurance policy. So, you know, a very important thing I think for the community to do when they set about on this sort of taking over the maintenance themselves is to firstly make sure they've got their own liability insurance in place that will provide them with some protection. And even more important than that, making sure that all their third-party contractors, I heard your previous caller, you know, having a moan about how sometimes the municipality employs third-party contractors and they don't know what they're doing. If third-party contractors don't have their own insurance in place, then, of course, it means that all of the liability is just going to sit on the shoulders of the community. So they need to make sure they've got proper agreements in place with whoever they're using to do repairs, maintenance, whatever the job is.
And that's important. That's what I've been trying to tease out. Is it's all good and well if Lester Walid Amen Johannes decides to fix the road, but if it can be proven that our lack of expertise has not provided the best road surface that caused an accident, we could then be held liable for that because we've decided to take on a job which was supposed to be done by the state.
Absolutely. I mean, in my career, Lester, I've done the liability insurances for municipalities over many years. And I can tell you there is a flood of claims against these organizations. And it ranges from, you know, damage in potholes to fires being started on the side of the road by the guys that are cutting the grass. And of course, that leads to huge damage if it spreads to somebody's property. You've got water sanitation and maintenance that hasn't been kept up properly. And then there's flooding when the rains come. You know, the gutters and the drains are all blocked up. And at the moment, that liability sits with local government. Mm. But that would shift onto the shoulders of the community if they've taken on those responsibilities.
Before the December visitors arrive, I took it. It's something the trade union movement teaches us, I guess. Hey, if you're not getting somewhere and you've been talking about it, put it in the public domain. Mm. And so the whole headline of the newspaper, the Weekend Post, that Saturday said, Port Elizabeth beaches are being threatened. They're finished. They're really under the whip. That whole headline. Mm. Now, that still didn't get guys moving. But on the other hand, can you start doing all the repairing when you haven't put other things in place to deal with the vandalism of the homeless who are living in the bushes around us? Mm. Like, I believe you've got the same problems in Cape Town. Mm. So now we're talking to people there to say, how do we deal with that issue first so we can safeguard whatever changes go on in the beachfront so it doesn't get all stolen again? Mm. So we will go and put it in the public domain if you refuse to listen.
Well, Ian Miller, thanks so much for giving us a really great community involvement perspective. Really, really appreciate it. Are you part of a community that's fulfilling municipal roles, state roles by yourselves? Let me know. 021-446-0567. The entire show, last half of the show, dedicated to something as innocuous as potholes, but how it is so important to our economy and also the safety of our communities. Let me know. 021-446-0567. We're talking about the liability next of when communities decide to do it for themselves.